Blog Talk Radio.
Good Thursday afternoon. I hope everyone is enjoying their day today. I'm so excited about today's guest, as I have a very special guest joining me today. So today's show is going to be great. She's not on the line yet, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and hopefully she'll jump on the line. And if not, hopefully I can get her on the show at another time. She's very, very busy and has quite the extensive resume, and I'm sure that she is a bit detained in something something very important. She is 3-time Olympic gold medalist, Title IX expert, and professor of law, Nancy Hogshead Makar. In the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, she won 3 gold medals and 1 silver medal in swimming. She won more medals than any other swimmer at the 1984 Olympics. And now she is an expert on Title IX. It has profoundly affected her life and her accomplishments. And today we were going to talk about what Title IX is and how it's affected her life and the lives of many of the female athletes that she comes in contact with. Hello, Professor.
Hello, Beth. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. I was just giving you a bit of a an introduction before you jumped on the line. I was hoping that was you.
Yes, yes. Hopefully right on time.
Exactly. Right at 2 o'clock. I had just finished giving a very brief introduction. All of your accomplishments are so extensive, as I was explaining to the listeners, that I cannot even begin to get into all of them. I was reading over your resume before the show. I thought it would be great to have you on the show with the Olympics coming up. You yourself being an Olympic champion, 3 gold medals, 1 silver in swimming. I think that would be a really great place to start. What was it like representing our country and doing so extremely well, winning more medals than anyone there at the Olympics?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I had been a world-class swimmer for 8 years, but I was part of, you know, right smack dab in the middle of my career, what I thought was going to be the end of my career was the 1980 Olympic boycott. So we didn't get to go to those Olympics. And, you know, I had already been competing against, you know, the East Germans and the Soviets and the Chinese and everybody. And I didn't grasp at the time how big the Olympics were as compared to, say, world championships, where it's all the same people. And I have to tell you, I was never more proud to represent my country, but also it's such an international event that the Olympics represents the best of what humanity can do. And whenever you're watching the best of anything, that's, you know, table tennis or archery or equestrian or swimming or running or diving, it is inspiring. And so I had people, first, you know, it was in America, it was in Los Angeles, so people were really just wonderfully gushy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had people from other countries who were also wonderfully gushy, and at first I didn't really get it, because I was like, you know, I won and your country lost. But then, you know, I finally got it. It's like when I went to go see other events at the Olympics, it's a new take. There really is a sense of a world, a humanity that's present in the air.
So next week when all the Olympians arrive, it's going to be quite a shock, I guess, for them to maybe going from only competing in their country or against a few countries to competing against, competing on a world stage.
Sure. I mean, a lot of them are very well seasoned. I mean, because of first Title IX, and then you had another wave of when athletes could get money, so they weren't dependent on their parents to be able to support them. Then you see careers being a lot longer. So some of these athletes are very experienced and seasoned, and, you know, this is their 3rd or 4th or even 5th Olympic Games. You know, but for the vast majority of them, this will be the one and only time that they'll get to compete, that they'll get to rub elbows in the Olympic sort of where everybody stays, you know, that all the teams and countries are all mixed up in the dorms. And you know, the Olympic Village is just an opportunity to really to make a lot lot of international friends that I still have today from 1984.
That's great. That's tremendous. I was reading you. We'll get into Title IX now because I know that's your specialty, and you are an expert at Title IX. And you you just testified before the United States Senate, the Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading your transcript, you talked about how Title IX has profoundly affected your life. So if you could give maybe a, probably difficult maybe to give a brief overview, but somewhat of an overview of what Title IX is to listeners who've never maybe heard of it or who aren't involved in sports, but maybe have children who they'd like to get into sports and can use this tool to help them.
Sure. Well, Title IX is a federal law that says that if a school receives any federal funds, so if they receive our tax dollars, but they can't discriminate. And by the way, Title IX is patterned after Title VI, which barred discrimination based on race, color, and national origin. After Title IX, there was another statute called the Rehabilitation Act that was passed. And then after that, there was age discrimination. So all four statutes really stand together, meaning that when something happens to them in the legal world, to one of them, then something will happen to all of them. So, but it says that basically, you receive our federal funds, we don't want you to discriminate.
Mm.
We don't want to use these funds to discriminate. So the Constitution only applies to schools that are public schools. But a lot of, particularly higher education, my university, Duke University, my law school, Georgetown University, where I teach right now, Florida Coastal School of Law, they receive a lot of federal funds via mostly student loans, but also lots of grants, lots of research grants, and, you know, help with libraries and all kinds of things. So schools receive federal funds. Well, the thing that makes athletics different than everything else is, you know, when you look at a classroom and you see that it's 50-50 boys, girls, or even if you see that, you know, you're in one part of the school and maybe it's 80-20 girls, boys, and you look at another classroom and it's 80-20 boys, girls, that it's operating in all of those spheres. But what Title IX said is that you couldn't discriminate based on sex, meaning that you have to have sort of gender blind or racial blind or rehabilitation, or you know, if somebody has a disability, you have to sort of operate in a blind manner, meaning that at Florida Coastal, I was chair of the admissions department for 4 years, the faculty admissions committee. And we really didn't look at gender at all. Our classes turned out to be about 50-50, but it was just sort of happenstance that it worked that way. But, you know, we just looked at GPA, LSAT score, and then what other sort of criteria that students had that we thought indicated that they would do well in law school. But athletics is different, and here's why. Athletics are sex segregated. So athletics, only athletics did you have to create a whole women's team. In the math department, you just had to allow women to be able to compete at the same basis that men did for a slot in the math department. Not true with athletics. You had to create a whole new women's athletic department. So, you had to create, you know, new basketball team, new swimming team, new track and field team, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And the measure for whether or not there's discrimination is different than it is in the math program. The math program could be, you know, 80% female, 10% male, or vice versa, and be perfectly fine, but probably not in athletics.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. I hadn't really thought about that as far as, like, on already established programs and within a school, you can just add girls, but having to make a new program for you know, a women's basketball team, for example. I mean, that's a whole new program.
You got to build new facilities. You got to hire a new coach. You got to go out and recruit those athletes, et cetera.
Yeah, when I grew up, my teen years were in the 90s, and my formative years, I guess, my preteen years were in the 80s. And it, you know, it really wasn't encouraged for girls to play sports. And
mm-hmm.
And I didn't. I was more on the academic side, and I guess, you know, there weren't really many opportunities. I mean, you know, I couldn't do gymnastics because I'm 5'10". and cheerleading, for that matter. That was sort of a challenge, too.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I mean, you have to have the, I mean, your life story is just, you shows that you have to have those opportunities. If you don't have the opportunity, I was really lucky that my family moved here to Jacksonville, Florida, and he worked at a hospital that was associated with the Episcopal Church, so I had to go to Episcopal High School, and what do you know, there was one of the best coaches in the world just happened to be there getting his coaching career started. He was probably all of 24 years old, but, you know, he was well on his way to having, he's probably had 100 Olympians right now. I mean, he's, you know, a very, very famous coach, right? But I, how lucky of me, right? I had to go to the school, and at this school, you know, and so if I had gone to maybe your school and you didn't have a swimming program there, I would have a very different history there. So, you know, how interested kids are in doing something or having a, developing a particular ability like, you know, music or art or mathematics or physics depends on whether or not, do they have any exposure to it? Do they, right? So in sports, you have to create a whole new girls' team in order for girls to be able to have that opportunity to get interested in it.
Absolutely. And this is the 40th year anniversary of Title IX. Mm-hmm. And that's what you were celebrating up in Washington when you were testifying before the Senate committee, and you were, you testified with some very prestigious ladies, Billie Jean King being one of them, who is I grew up watching and took tennis lessons because of.
She was in full icon mode. She just, you know, she is amazing. And I got to spend a lot of the day with her. I work for an organization. I'm not just a professor at the Florida Coastal School of Law. I'm also the senior director of advocacy for the Women's Sports Foundation. Mm-hmm. And it was started by Billie Jean King. Bob Hope gave her some money after she won a celebrity tournament and said, who do you want to give it to? And she looked around and she said, you know, I don't really see anything that I want to give it. I really want to give it to an organization that's dedicated to women in sports. So she took the money and created the Women's Sports Foundation, and you know, so I was lucky. So she was speaking, I was speaking. Also, Dr. Mae Jamison, who is the first African American astronaut in space, and she was amazing. She talked a lot about girls in STEM careers and how it is that we can encourage more girls to participate in those. We're one of the few countries that. Has a very limited number of girls in STEM fields, and our country is really missing out when we don't get the best out of all of our citizenry, and that's where the future jobs are of America, so these science, engineering, medical, and technology, and you know, if we as a country are somehow not figuring this out the way other countries have, then, you know, we as a country become very disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
I
was going to ask you the difference between 1972 and 2012 with Title IX. What have you seen? I mean, you've pretty much seen the spectrum of the 40 year spectrum of Title IX.
Sure. Well, like, you know, you said your formative years were spent in the late 80s. And, you know, girls just really didn't play sports. And now you have about 2 out of every 5 girls play a high school sport. And so that is a sea change difference that, you know, that as soon as you start hitting around the 50% mark, then it becomes normalized. Then it's not just a particular group. Like you said, I'm in this academic group. Well, if half the kids are doing it, then it's both the academics and the musicians and the people who are interested in technology and people from the chess club and the, right? I mean, it's not any one particular group, and that is what is really revolutionary, because athletes know that sports is a transformative experience, that to have control over your own body, to feel comfortable in your own body and your own skin, and to feel some mastery over it, to be able to know that you can take your body from point A to point B over a matter of months and watch the skill level go up and the, you know, speed and strength and everything else, that, you know, back in our day, there were a lot of these movies on, like, the Lifetime Channel that talked about how women, that it was, the whole storyline was a woman who becomes self-empowered through participating in sports. And it's weird. We don't even see stories like that anymore because we just sort of take it as a truism. So one of the biggest things that I've seen is just any stigma or any idea that, you know, girls didn't do that, particularly at the junior high school level, is just G-O-N-E, gone. That is, you know, you might hear it there, you know, here and there, but for the most part, it is, you know, what women do are, in athletics is really celebrated, particularly at, you know, I had young kids, so, and I have a boy and I've got two girls, and I really just don't see any difference between how the boys and the girls are celebrated at that age. But, you know, within their family and their social circles, there's a big difference in how they're celebrated in the media.
Hmm.
But within their life's experience, it's you know, parents and their family and supporters are you know, they equally validate what it is that these kids are doing.
Hmm. Well, that's really terrific on the personal level, and really that's where it means the most.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you're celebrated in the media is, I think, sort of secondary to what you feel inside, the transformation that you feel, the pride that you get from beating your own record or beating a world record in your case. pardon me. The pride that you would get from doing that is I think so important, and that's why I wanted to talk to you today. You know, since it's the 40th anniversary of Title IX, and we're getting ready to celebrate the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. They really coincide with each other, and the women who are representing the United States, I'm sure, have benefited from Title IX just immensely, and all the work that you've done. And these past, 20 years, 18 years, with Title IX, and you know, I read that you wanted to become a lawyer because you felt like understanding Title IX, in just to the nth degree, and understanding the, you know, the legislative language and how and why it was passed and all that would benefit your advocacy.
Yeah, no, it's funny, it's true. When I was, I didn't go to law school right after undergraduate. I took some years off, and I had been the president of the Women's Sports Foundation, and I knew that's what was getting me into it. I had met some lawyers that I was very impressed with, and how sometimes you'll look at somebody and you say, I can go there, and it was one of those experiences. And but I really thought that the whole Title IX debate would be completely over by the time I graduated, right? I thought that. That, you know, there were some famous cases going on at the time, the legislature, it all seemed like, you know, it was just going to happen. And not in a million years would I still think today that I'd be, you know, talking to so many people on the phone about how to get more resources for their girls' sports, about how they should be treated the same way that the boys get treated, what an important message that sends out to everybody in the whole school, not just to those particular kids. I just never in a million years thought that we wouldn't be further along. I actually would have been probably a little depressed thinking about, you know, sort of how far it is that we have to go. So we have definitely come a long way. We definitely have, but we still have a long way to go. And I would take issue. I know that it's important what family and friends think and what people's individual world, but the media coverage that women give, that the media gives to women athletes, I think could really be the next wave for women's sports. They've had lots of participation opportunities thanks to, you know, the inability to for institutions that receive federal funds to discriminate based on sex. So they've had lots of sports opportunities. But if you don't see it in the media, if you don't see it being celebrated, the way that the Olympics are celebrated, for example, it's hard to imagine that you could be it. And So, first of all, the Olympics are great because it is the viewing audience is actually skewed towards females. It is the most highly watched sporting event by far in the world, and women and men, they don't seem to care if they're watching women or men. That you know, that all things are there. But until women get into the media a lot, it's very easy for people to fall back on those stereotypes that, A, women aren't very good athletes, and so they're not going to be inspiring to watch, or, B, that, that you know, women don't really have – it's not really their place to be in athletics. They're an anomaly, that the men, this is their field, and the women are just sort of these interlopers. You can have these stereotypical views if you don't see them in the media all the time. And I would say most of the people that I deal with who – hold these views and who are trying to weaken Title IX, they don't have young daughters who are out there participating. And those ideas only ring true if you just don't have that experience. So so I do think that it's important that, that women athletes are portrayed in ways that allow you to really appreciate what kind of an athlete it is that there are, that they are. Unfortunately, right now, women feel that in order to get a lot of attention, they have to be sexy. And sexy's fine in lots of situations, but in the world of sport, it just doesn't develop fans. It doesn't develop people appreciating what somebody's doing as an athlete. So it may get them this laser-focused attention on them personally, but it will not help women's sports break into mainstream the same way that participation at elementary school, middle school, college has broken into the mainstream.
Yeah, that's very true. I was just sitting here thinking, you know, can I really name a lot of female athletes that I, you know, and I really can't. It's true. It's very, very true what you're saying. And getting that recognition is it's just as important for men as it is for women. Mm-hmm. And I totally get what you're saying there, and really kind of opened my eyes to, you know, to thinking, you know, you're just so used to hearing, you know, you hear about all these male golfers, but, you know, where are the women golfers?
Right.
You know, I really, you know, can't really think of any, but, you know, you hear of even scandals about men, but you don't really hear about, you know, maybe women are just too good. They just don't. They
Women's scandals compared to the male scandals, you know, are just really not in the same planetary system.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and talking about Title IX. I think this is such an important subject.
Yeah.
You were, just to disclose to all my listeners, you were my torts professor in law school, both torts one and torts two. I did not take sports law, however, and I'm now regretting it because I think I would have learned so much and may have found a new field of study, but who knows. But I did want to add that one of your accolades is that you were named the 2004 Favorite Professor Award by the first, well, we call them 1Ls in law school, but it's a first-year class. And that was my class.
Oh, well, thank you. I still have that award hanging on my wall in my office.
Oh, great.
It really did mean a lot to me. It really did. I was
reading through all of your accolades, which, I mean, you know, I was going through them before I put you on live. I was going through all your accolades, and I was like, you know, that's one that I had something to do with.
Yeah. Oh,
so I'm going to mention it. But
can I just put in one more plug, one more thing?
Absolutely.
And that is that if we're ever going to actually achieve the promise that Title IX holds out for girls, both academically and in athletics, it's going to take families to make that difference for their kid. That you really can't depend on the athletic directors to be able to make this progress. A lot of times schools will say, oh, everything's fine here because we have the same number of sports for boys that we do for girls.
Mm-hmm.
And but the sports that they're offering for boys are much higher numbers of kids' sports. So they may have 100 football players. They may have 35 baseball players. And then on the other women's side, like if they've got a tennis team, it's 8. If they've got a gymnastics team, it's 6. If they've got a golf team, it's 6. If they've got a track and field team, it'll be 10, et cetera. So, like, you need to have, if you're going to have those high numbers of boys, if you're going to have boys teams that have lots of players on them, you need to either, you need to find a lot, probably a lot more sports for girls to make the numbers equal out, right? So, and
right.
that takes family. So we encourage people to both go onto our website, womensportsfoundation.org, and to call us. And we can really help them to get sophisticated enough to be able to go into the athletic department and really, not just for their daughters, but for the next generation of kids who are coming down the pike.
Absolutely. It takes a village, but it also takes a family. To establish something now is to see it grow later on.
Yeah.
And that would be a tremendous legacy to leave behind.
It sure would.
So is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I'm looking forward to school starting again in the fall, and I'm sure I'll have another great group of students just like you. Did you think that you got a good education at Florida Coastal?
Absolutely. I'm very proud to tell anybody that I went there, and I always mention the great faculty. I think the faculty is top-notch. I live here in Tallahassee, and we have Florida State here, but I'd put it up against anybody, Florida Coastal up against anybody. So
thank you.
Everybody here thinks I went to Florida State, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I went to Florida Coastal, which is an absolutely tremendous school. And you know what? You were my first professor on my first day of class.
Oh, yeah?
You were, and I was so nervous. And I thought the way you taught your class was really, really great because, at least the way you were teaching then, we each had a section of tort law that we were to present to the class.
Right, counsel for the day.
Yes, counsel for the day. And that put a lot of stress off of thinking that every day you had to know everything. You know, you felt like you could come to class, learn what the other students could present to you, and then, do just as good a job when you did it yourself. So I really, really like that. It really helped take off those first-year nerves, at least in your class. That was the feedback I had to give to you for that. I really loved Counsel for the Day. I'd forgotten the name of it. That's right. You can tell it's been a while.
Yeah. It also really helps with writing, too. I mean, usually first-year students in particular are worried about if you give them a problem, they want to find the law, and what's much more important is that they learn how to do the analysis, right, that they learn how to apply the facts to the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that, and that's what that exercise is designed to do, is I give you the law, and then you have to come up with both the facts and the analysis.
Right, yeah, and that's like really the core of law school right there, is the is coming up with the analysis, applying the facts to the law, and then analyzing what you got there. So that was really great. I had a really, really good time learning. Torts is a fun class.
crazy things.
Yeah, I remember people doing little skits and stuff. It was really fun. I really enjoyed that. So I'm sure that's why you earned favorite professor, because we were all like, oh, we get to go to a fun class and and learn about torts in a fun way. So
good. Well, thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we will finish up today. Thank you so much for your time. I know how valuable it is. Not only are you an expert at Title IX, a former Olympic champion, and director of the Women's Sports Foundation, but you're also a wife and mother, and I know that you are very busy, so I appreciate your taking the time to join me today.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's just, especially, it's always good to be able to talk to the media about my area of expertise, but to be able to do it with, you're actually my first ever former student that I've had an interview with, and I relish this opportunity. So thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we'll end the show today. Thank you so much, Professor.
Okay, have a great day.
Oh, you too.
Okay, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. And that ends the Success Design with Beth Schenkel Anderson today. I thank you for joining me. I hope you got a lot out of today's today's radio show. I feel like that Professor Hogshead was incredible as usual. So I will see you back here at the next episode. Thank you. Bye.